69. Trouble. Herschel, February 2345, Omicron Squared Eridani.
We were floating 1.5 million kilometers from Romulus and Vulcan, cloaking shield up and radio silent. The Bellerophon was probably radiating in infrared at least a bit, but only an astronomer would be viewing the heavens in that frequency range. Sudar was so dependable, why would you bother with anything else? At least, as far as the humans knew. The Babaverse decision to keep quiet about cloaking was turning out to be a better idea all the time. Eventually, of course, it would leak out, and we'd be back to an arms race, but for now we had the advantage. Of course, there was always the random chance of some vessel coming into close enough range to accidentally detect us, but we'd planned our position to avoid all the known flight lanes. I received a ping from Will, followed by a video connection. I'm coming up on the agreed position. You guys there yet? Been here for 6 hours, Will. You'll see us in visible light when you get close enough. You going to finally tell us how you got here from 82 Eridani in next to no time? Wormnet. Come again? Wormnet. A series of wormholes connecting different star systems. We've been setting them up on the quiet out in the Kuiper and Oort zone. By the way, Bill hates the name, so be sure to use it every chance you get. I stared at Will at a total loss for words. Finally, I guess this is more of that secrecy stuff? Yes. And I promise I'll bring you guys completely up to date once we're done here. But for now, it's irrelevant to the task at hand. We have 30,000 ever-onward members. We need to move off-planet as quickly as possible. Well, not all of them, I said. Some are spies. Some are just playing at it and are unlikely to take us up on the offer. I've built separate lists for them. Will nodded. We'll contact the reluctant ones last. If any of them spills the beans to the government, it'll be too late to stop us. And where will we put them? In the Fargo. I have a rotating cargo section with environmentals and facilities set up for human habitation. We don't want a repeat of last time. We had joined Will's VR to coordinate activities. He maintained the same war room motif that had been used in the war for Earth. It had been effective then, and we were already familiar with it. Several holotanks sat in a semicircle, showing different tactical views of the action. There was no way I could personally control all the transport drones, even with help from Neil and Will. Fortunately, the AMIs could handle that part of things, but I couldn't resist looking over their metaphorical shoulders as they progressed through their routes. Each person or family had been advised to be home at a particular hour for an important communication. 30,000 people. It was a little better than it sounded, since most were in families, so there were really fewer than 7,000 pickup locations. A large part of them were our descendants, although we still intended to pick up everyone who wanted to come. But still, it felt a little like collecting humans from Earth during the final battle with the Others in Sol, and a little like how Phineas and Ferb described collecting Pav before the arrival of the Others there. And I couldn't help wondering if all this was even necessary. Were we reacting to a sort of generational trauma of our own? Were we still in a battle with the faith of 200 years ago? But we couldn't take the chance. If we asked politely and the government said no, we would be hooped. As Will had said more than once, this was about forgiveness versus permission. The process was simple in concept. Land a drone, load people, take off. Of course, we hadn't filed flight plans, so technically, I suppose we were breaking the law. It would take 4 hours at most for the first wave, based on us simultaneously hitting as many loading points as possible. Then we would move to phase two, involving the possibly reluctant members. And we almost made it. I'm not sure what tipped off the government. It might just have been a random check at the wrong moment, but suddenly military warbirds swarmed into the air from several nearby Air Force bases. Our transports had to avoid using SUDAR to track the approaching enemy, otherwise the SUDAR ping itself would identify them. But we could track things from space, then forward the tracking info. Not perfect, since it announced our presence, but good enough. They're mostly casting about blindly, looking for something to attack, Will said. Right, but if they lock on... Oh, crap. As I was replying, a squad of warbirds turned to pursue several of our transports that had been leaving Port Henning, a small Romulan town off the West Nile Sea. Our transports were fast, but not military grade, and Faith hadn't spared the bucks when building its military. What are they going to do? Neil commented. Shoot us down? Will got a bemused expression on his face. They're hailing us. Hailing? I couldn't help but chuckle. There's still some Riker in there, apparently. Will gave me an eye roll, then popped up a video window. The caller was President Ella Cranston, granddaughter of Minister Elias Cranston, Will's original nemesis from way back when. She was old and looked it, possibly entering the terminal deterioration phase of aging. And furious. Wow, I seriously expected her head to start cracking open. She was actually ejecting spit at her communicator as she yelled at Will. The words war, criminals, piracy, and retaliation kept coming up, although I was having trouble untangling the sentences. Finally, she had to stop for oxygen. Will smiled and said, "Well, hello, Ella. It's been a while."
"It's President Cranston, you execrable failure of a copied human."
"I guess some things never change. What can I do for you?"
"You have kidnapped tens of thousands of our citizens. I want them back. You have broken any number of laws, both major and minor, in the process. We will be seeking redress in UFS Interplanetary Court and..."
"President Cranston," Will said, interrupting her. "We kidnapped no one, since kidnapping involves duress, and these people all came willingly. Nevertheless, we will gladly hand over any and all who want to return." Cranston hesitated, apparently sensing a trap.
"Nevertheless, your methods were illegal. That is an issue you can't make disappear."
"Wouldn't dream of it, but nothing that we've done is a felony, and we'll gladly pay the fines for all airspace infractions. Just give us a list." Cranston drew a breath to reply, and Will again cut her off. "Look, let's be candid. Either you're willing to let these people go, or you're not. In the former case, all we're guilty of is overly enthusiastic transport operations. In the latter, you'd be contravening the Romulan Constitution, the UFS Constitution, and the covenants you signed as a condition of being brought here in the first place." Will held up a hand as Cranston seemed about to interject. "Even if you consider those invalid, we can tie you up in court literally longer than the lifetimes of anyone in your government or in our ship right now. How much effort do you want to put into tilting at this windmill, Ella?" Cranston seemed to consider for a moment before replying,
"Very well. But they will all give up their Romulan citizenship and all rights and privileges associated with that. Government pensions, insurances, and properties will all be forfeit, effective immediately."
"I can live with that. I'm sure they all can." Will made a show of reaching for the disconnect switch, a totally unnecessary move in VR. "My lawyers will talk to your lawyers and get everything settled. Goodbye, Ella." Will closed the window before she could respond. "Large groups of warcraft leaving planet's surface," Neil said in a clipped tone. "Heading our way." Will looked up. "We're loaded?" "Good. Let's make tracks, guys. I'm sure the warships are just for show, but why take chances? How long for you to get up to a good speed?" I grinned at Will.
Kinda over-engineered the new engines. Good luck keeping up."
"Oh, it's like that, is it?" Will smiled back. "Challenge accepted."
Bravado was all fine and good, but in the end we had to follow Will, since we didn't know our destination. He led us on a very specific vector as we continued to accelerate. "So where are we going, Will?" I asked. We were still in the War Room VR. "Wormhole. It's collapsed down to its microscopic form, but the satellites are charged up and ready to expand it just before we get there. Then it'll collapse back down." Will stopped and chuckled. Bill had to do some quick engineering to design a way to close the wormholes. He'd only been worried about getting them open. Typical non-military mind. I gave Will the side eye. That sounded surprisingly critical for one Bob to be saying about another. But Neil didn't react, so I let it pass. "Can't Faith expand it again if they find it?" "No. It's registered as the property of a Vulcan company, so Romulus is risking all kinds of piracy charges if they try to screw with it. Not that I'd put it past them at this point, but they also don't have the control keys, don't understand the technology in the first place, and don't have control over the other end or even know how to access it. You have to expand both ends of a wormhole before you can pass through." "What happens if only one end is open?" I asked. "Ah, well, we did an experiment where we tried to fly a drone through a wormhole that was too small for it." Will grinned and held the moment we obliged by growling at him. "Since space-time is spherical inside a wormhole, if it's not wide enough for you, you basically run into the other side of yourself." "Which way? Sideways? Front? All of the above, Hirsch. At whatever velocity you're traveling." "Wow." Both Neil and I were stunned. The image of a heaven vessel smacking into itself at several hundred thousand kilometers per hour. "I guess there wouldn't be much left," Will laughed, "like a sausage grinder. Not much more than individual atoms comes out the other end." "Well, okay," Neil said, "but can we make sure it's wide open when we get there? I don't want to be a sausage."